All right, Craig, thank you. I'm Dave Congleton. It is Thursday, May 24th, 2018. Good to be with you. Thanks for tuning in. Just one last reminder, tomorrow at 5 o'clock, we're going to give an equal time segment. Supporters of Tom Bordenoro will be here to counter what you heard last night during this hour. The rest of this show, I understand that our programming director and all-around good guy, Pepper Daniels, is taking credit for this segment, but actually it's my idea. We have heard from Matt Hoy and William Yane separately in recent months on the issue of guns. I thought it would be interesting to bring them together. I start by reminding of a basis statistic. According to the Congressional Research Service, there are roughly twice as many guns per capita in the United States as there were in 1968. More than 300 million guns in all just in this country. Obviously, gun sales have increased in recent years for any number of reasons. So I decided to bring in someone who is very much pro-gun, along with someone who is very concerned about guns, to see if we could have a thoughtful, calm discussion about this issue. And we will invite your phone calls later on. With that in mind, we say good afternoon. Welcome back to William Yanes and Matt Hoy. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Nice to see both of you.
Good to see you, Dave.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Matt, let's just remind people a little bit about your interest in guns and your support of guns.
I'm a Second Amendment supporter. I've owned guns for many years. My main interest is usually self-defense and target shooting. I'm not much of a hunter, but if someone wants to take me hunting, it's been years since I've had really good venison, so I would appreciate that.
All right. William, what should people know about you in terms of guns?
I was a former advocate for guns in general. I worked as a marketer for a firearms accessories manufacturer for about a year. My job was to promote fancy upgrades for AR-15 platform rifles.
Right. And we have agreed that we're going to just kind of cover the waterfront. It's not just going to be school shootings, although that has certainly been in the news a lot lately. We're going to try to tackle the whole issue of guns in America in less than 2 hours. So, William, let's just kind of jump into it. As someone who used to be a gun enthusiast, why have you softened your opinion, and what are some of your concerns about gun ownership in this country?
My concerns mostly have to do with the lack of any type of legislation designed to make them less accessible to anybody 18 years or older who can pass a background check that is pretty imperfect and pretty leaky in the first place. Putting all these guns in the hands of people who are not qualified to use them or not trained to use them, might be emotionally unstable, is a recipe for the type of headlines that we see, yet another mass shooting at a school. It's unacceptable. It doesn't happen in other countries.
Guns are too accessible, Matt. It's too easy to get a gun in this country.
Well, I don't know that that's the case everywhere. The problem is if you make getting guns too inaccessible, then yes, you're preventing the mentally unstable from getting them, but you're also preventing the people who need to gun to defend themselves from someone mentally unstable from getting them. The most famous recent case, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, is a woman named Carol Bone, B-O-W-N-E. She lived in New Jersey. In New Jersey, the law is before you can buy a gun, you have to apply for a permit. Okay. And this isn't a permit to carry the gun in public. This is a permit to buy the gun in the first place.
Okay.
From the local chief of police. State law says they've got to answer you within 30 days, yay or nay. It often does not happen within 30 days. It's often 60 days, sometimes 90. Carol Bone was B-O-W-N-E. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it. She was seeking a gun because she had an ex-boyfriend who was a convicted felon who was violent to her. 30 days went by. 60 days went by. She was calling the local sheriff to find out the status of her gun permit request when she was stabbed to death in her driveway by her ex-boyfriend.
One example.
That's one example.
It's anecdotal evidence. The fact it's anecdotal. It's a single instance of somebody
There,
what if, as if she could have protected herself with the gun that she didn't get. She may have been able to, but the myth of self-defense is exactly that. Guns that are bought for that purpose are more often used by loved ones or mentally unstable people or somebody in the middle of a domestic argument. That's fact.
But the fundamental question...
Hold on. Okay. That's false, and I've stated this before.
Go ahead.
Where they get that number is they count suicides... and crimes, so about 30,000 a year, about two-thirds of those are suicide. So 20,000 are suicide. And they count all of those deaths and say, okay, that's on one side. Okay, what are the self-defense? And when it comes to self-defense, they only count if you use a gun in self-defense and you kill the other person. If you shoot and wound them, it's not counted on that side of the literature. If you brandish the weapon and get the, and if you shoot and miss, it's not counted on the self-defense side of the ledger. If you brandish that weapon and they flee, it's not counted on the self-defense side of the ledger.
So what, at the end of the day, what does that leave?
At the end of the day, the smallest number of the best guesstimate on the low side at the number of times a gun is used in self-defense in this country is about 200,000. The high side is about 2.5 million. It's probably somewhere in between.
That's completely improbable. And the problem with these arguments, with these studies that are based, that essentially advocate for guns as a self-defense mechanism, is that the numbers are almost entirely self-reported. You're counting on somebody to recount an incident in which they used their gun to ward off or discourage or actually shoot an attacker. It's imperfect. There have been several studies. Harvard Medical School did one not that long ago that seemed to indicate that the number is way overestimated, typically in NRA-based publications.
But the question on the table, though, gentlemen, I come back to you, Matt, is it too easy to get a gun in this country?
I don't think so. At least not in California, I don't think it is.
Explain.
In California, you've got to pass a background check.
Okay.
It's not just the federal one. The state has its own databases that are checked as well. You have to pass a firearm safety test, and you have to wait 10 days to take possession of that gun. I don't think that's too little. In fact, I think that's a little too much, especially if you've already owned a gun. There was a lawsuit which got shot down by the Ninth Circuit where they wanted to make an exception to that 10-day wait if you had a concealed carry permit, which means you've been fingerprinted, you've been checked by the sheriff of your county or the police chief to be okay carrying a gun, or if you were in the state database as already owning a firearm, that, you know, what's the point of a 10-day cooling off period if you already got a gun? And they said, nope, you still got to wait 10 days.
All right.
That's sensible. We've got to keep guns out of that. We got to stop the flow of guns into the hands of everybody 18 and over in this country. Everybody knows that those background checks are not national. They're leaky as heck from state to state.
Well, then we should fix the background checks.
Absolutely.
I am 110% with you on fixing those background checks.
When you say fixing, would you support a national background check database?
Well, the NICS thing is national. Is it leaky because municipalities in some states, and as we found out in the Sutherland Springs shooting in Texas, the Air Force and the military don't report domestic violence convictions to it?
That's a problem.
They should be forced to do that.
Absolutely.
I am 100% with making sure that that database is a million times better than it is now.
Then let's end this first segment on that positive note. We have agreement on something with William Yanes and Matt Hoy as we have an open-ended dialogue about guns. We'll continue that conversation. Your phone call still to come. I'm Dave Congleton. This is AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. We are joined by our advocates, Matt Hoy and William Yanes. We're talking about guns, gun laws, and the status of guns in America. Your phone calls during the 6 o'clock hour. William, let me come back to you this segment because you wanted to look overseas to compare us to other countries.
The main point being that you don't see these types of gun deaths per capita in the other nations that compare to the United States for the purposes of this particular metric. Per capita death rates per 100,000 in other countries are typically fractions, 0.5, 0.3. In America, it's somewhere around 6 something. It's an incredible ridiculous number that is an embarrassment, and something needs to be done about it. The problem is we've got guns flooding into the hands of anybody 18 or over, the NRA owning the legislative process around this. They're not advocates for hunters or conservation or marksmanship anymore. They're just a lobbying group for manufacturers of firearms.
And Matt, when you look overseas in other countries, what do you see? Do you see a better situation?
Well, it's a different situation. The problem is, you know, William here says, you know, guns are flooding and we've got all these deaths. Well, as you noted at the very beginning of this hour, the number of guns in the U.S. has doubled in the past, you know, since, what, 68 or whatever it was. Yet, since the mid-90s at the very least, through 2015 or so, the violent crime rate with guns is halved in this country. Now we get more we've had more mass shootings. Mass shootings are a relatively new occurrence, but we've doubled the number of guns. We've halved the number the violent crime rate in this country. Causation and correlation are tough to prove, but I don't see how you can make the case that more guns equals more crime.
Let's look specifically at the example of Australia.
More guns equals more gun deaths per capita. That's my point. If you put guns in the presence of people, the more you put in their presence, the more they kill each other with guns. That is simply true. There's a study of studies, 10 different countries across 10 years. This study is completely expansive. It's correlated the presence of guns to gun deaths. It's not people kill people. Guns are there.
We have higher gun deaths by suicide, higher rate of suicides by gun in this country than they do in Japan. Do we have a higher rate of suicide than Japan? No, we do not.
No,
it's a cultural thing.
Meaning, in terms of guns.
Meaning, if you banned all guns tomorrow another interesting question. How are you going to get rid of some of those 300 million guns that are already
We'll get there.
But if you imagine, okay, the suicide rate probably isn't going to change appreciably. People are going to find other ways to do it, sadly. And that speaks to, we need to have better mental health treatment. We need to have more beds, and inpatient treatment facilities available for people who are mentally ill.
We all agree on that.
Firearms laws have been shown to reduce suicide deaths. They reduce gun deaths. These are preventable deaths that our legislators are thwarting and blocking.
Who has stronger firearms laws, California or Vermont?
I have no idea.
California by far. Vermont is a constitutional carry state.
What's your point?
My point is the gun laws don't have much to do with it. In Vermont,
ridiculous.
You don't need a permit to carry a gun in public. You don't need a permit. You don't need to pass a test to take it. You don't need to have a waiting period. And yet the crime rate in Vermont is a fraction of of what it is in California.
You don't have the urban centers in Vermont that you have in California. You don't.
Well, then it's not the guns.
So what about Australia, guys?
What about Australia?
They solved their gun problem.
They had a mass shooting last week.
They had a mass shooting last week, which was the first one since 1993. Compare that to the frequency and the number of people who die in mass shootings in the United States.
The point I'm trying to get to is whether or not Australia can be used as a model for gun control.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to address that point. It worked very well. When they had that mass shooting on a school grounds, they outlawed all kinds of weapons. They initiated a gun buyback program that was phenomenally successful. They haven't had a single mass shooting since 1993 up until last week.
All right, Matt, why is Australia not a good model for us?
Well, first off, you don't have you never had the gun culture in Australia that you had here. I mean, the hunting culture,
it's
all
an
that.
American it, problem.
Let him speak.
They don't have the gun culture. The gun buyback, and I frankly dislike the term buyback because the people never bought them from the government. It's not like the government's buying them back. It was a gun confiscation. And they said, turn in your guns or we will put you in jail. That's a confiscation, right?
Yeah, it makes it illegal for you to own that gun.
So they did a gun confiscation. by most estimates, they only got about a third of the guns turned in. People still held on to them, which would happen here if you did the same thing.
But what happened to the mass shootings? They ceased to exist. They ceased to happen. They stopped. There's no mass shooting since 1993 up until last week.
Well, there were a couple more, but they were kind of terrorist attacks.
Compare that to the frequency and the body count in the United States. It's ridiculously out of whack.
Well, you can better protect an island state than you can here. I mean, if we got people coming across the U.S.-Mexico border pretty easily, you think guns aren't going to travel that
guns
same way?
Guns as self-defense is a myth.
That's false.
What about Chicago? Let me just jump around here since we're going to such a broad topic before the news. What about Chicago? We keep hearing Chicago and the murder rate and the guns.
And they blame Indiana.
And Mississippi. And
whatever state. But you never seem to get the crimes in those states. It always goes to Chicago, which, again, is a gang problem. It's a cultural problem. And, again, we didn't have mass shootings in this country until, I mean, they started to come in vogue after Columbine, and you get a bunch of copycats.
We had mass shootings before
Columbine. You had one in Texas. There were a handful, but
we had the post office shootings.
Churches,
in the 80s.
Political rallies.
Yeah, I would disagree on that.
Concerts.
But anyway, what about Chicago?
Well,
Chicago. Here, do you know what Chicago used to be like? 10 years ago, they had a law that made it illegal for you to have a gun in your own house. You couldn't. There was no concealed carry law. Mm-hmm. It was like the sheriff you rode into town. The NRA dismantled those laws and made it very easy for guns to flow into the hands of people in Chicago. When the FBI traces the where those guns come from, 60 to 80%, depending on which study, of coming from
short
other
response,
states.
Matt.
Guns, again, guns have been, the gun sales have been going up. Violent crime and gun crime has been going down for 20 years.
All right, Matt Hoy, William Yanes on this broadcast. We'll pick up the conversation. Your phone call still to come. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. All right, Craig, thank you. We're continuing our conversation with William Yanes and Matt Hoy, two spirited advocates on the issue of guns. I know it's a general topic, but it's an important topic. We're going to welcome your phone calls during the 6 o'clock hour. As I come back to you, gentlemen, William, let me begin this segment with you. And you've been outlining this problem. You've been sharing some of your concerns. If you had the magic wand, what do you see as the solution? What would you like to see happen in this country?
Well, the magic wand would make most of the guns go away out of private hands and into only military law enforcement where they belong. But I think the reasonable thing is a platform that mandates universal background checks, bans high-capacity magazines, closes gun show loopholes, common-sense gun law reform that doesn't set off the gun advocates in a way that makes it seem like they're going to freak out about a gun grab. Most Americans want this. The guns are concentrated in the hands of maybe 30% of Americans. 62% of American households choose not to own or have guns. So all of those guns are concentrated in the hands of people who really love guns, and there are a lot of them out there.
Matt, what do you think what he's suggesting?
I think, first off, that number of households that have guns is a little low because they get that from calling people up and saying, do you have guns in your house? And there are plenty of people who will say, who, when a stranger calls them up and says, do I have guns in my house, will say no, because they don't want strangers to know they have guns in their house. The gun show loophole is a myth, at least in California and a bunch of other states. In California, if you go to a gun show and you purchase a firearm, you take it to a federal firearms licensee, they take down your information, they run a background check. They make sure you've got you've passed the firearm test and you have a card, and you've got to take that every 5 years. And they hold on to that gun for 10 days before they give it to you.
It's super easy to get guns in America compared to other countries.
Well,
I know you make
you
it sound like that's an arduous series of things to
you
go
You said
through,
there was a gun show loophole, and I just said there's not, and I showed you that there's not, and now it's still too easy.
The point that you're arguing is that it's difficult to get guns, and that the difficulty is an infringement upon the right of gun owners. What's bad about, what's wrong about that is that every other country treats guns as killing machines, and they are tightly, tightly regulated. You don't get a gun in other developed nations unless you demonstrate a compelling need to have one, unless you have demonstrated competency with that you pass psychological exams. We've got entire industry just flooding.
But is there or is there not a gun show loophole?
There is a gun show loophole. It's easy enough to buy a gun within a private party sale in California. You can
not legally. It's illegal. It's against the law.
Right. That's right.
So there's no gun show loophole. So the common sense gun law to close this, it's already closed.
Look, gun laws work.
Because you said it's illegal.
It's illegal.
So
there's no loophole.
Yeah, I see what he's saying.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
I mean that you know we get into the gun show. Again, I think the big difference between William and I, when it comes down to it, is that I think guns are useful for self-defense.
Right.
I've had people threaten me for stuff I write online.
Right.
I've had people make threats that, frankly, I believe are credible. I've had people stalk me and come after me. And I think a gun is a good idea for me to have. William thinks I'm more likely to hurt myself or someone else by owning a gun. I think he's wrong. There now, again, I mentioned the case of Miss Bone earlier in New Jersey.
Right.
He says it's anecdotal. There's lots of anecdotal instances.
Okay. But they don't make a compelling statistical argument.
Well,
you can't take a number.
No, I have. I've given it to you, and you just say no it's wrong and
you're
ignore it.
You're giving me an anecdote. I'm giving you research.
Yeah. Gary Kleck, in Florida. He estimated, based on telephone surveys, that there were somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million defensive gun uses a year in this country. That may be high. The low number, I believe, is about 50,000. And that's by guys on your side who say it's maybe 50,000.
Do you want to hear what Harvard University says? According to their figures, this is from the National Crime Victimization Survey. People defended themselves with a gun in nearly 0.9% of crimes from 07 to 2011. The risks of owning
that gun. And
that
is based on what? That is based on news reports. If someone just waves a gun and scares somebody off, does that make it into a news report? Have they looked at every single newspaper?
It's the National Crime Victimization Survey.
In fairness, that seems like a general dismissal of a statistic.
Well, but he's got a statistic from Harvard.
Right.
I've got a statistic from Florida. The news came out last month. Reason Magazine published this, and let me see if I can find it. But Reason Magazine published a note last month. Gary Kleck, the guy who did the study in the 90s in Florida that came up with a 2 to 2.5 million number, discovered in the Centers for Disease Control, asked this question and back in the 90s for three straight years in states covering a population of about 25% of the American U.S. population. And the CDC came up with a similar percent from that survey.
Meaning?
As he did.
Meaning?
They hit it for 20 years because it agreed with what he had, which was the higher number, around 2 million.
Matt Hoy, William Yanes on this broadcast. We will take your phone calls at 6:05. Please stop calling in. I want to give our advocates a chance to be heard. So
Let us beat up each other before they come to beat us up.
What, if anything, Matt, do you want to see done on the gun issue? You heard from William.
What we mentioned earlier, I would like, first off, that the background checks and all the data in that database to be fixed. I think that's a serious push. I think that would solve quite a few problems. I mean, you wouldn't have had the Charleston church shooter. He wouldn't have got a gun. Sutherland Springs shooter wouldn't have got a gun if the government agencies that are supposed to put that information in the background check system had done it. I think that we should enforce gun laws to the fullest extent that are already on the books, to the fullest extent we can. I think I mentioned this case when I was on your show earlier. Back in 2015 in Nebraska, there was a woman, a sheriff's deputy, who'd given birth to her child prematurely. She'd gone back to work as a sheriff's deputy, and on the day they were going to bring the child home and she was going to go on a delayed maternity leave, she was shot and killed by a felon who'd gotten a gun illegally. by having his girlfriend do a straw purchase. Okay, that is already a crime in this country. The judge gave that woman who did the straw purchase 12 months probation. You charge her as an accessory after the fact or accessory before the fact. You start putting people who do straw purchases in jail for years.
So why is what he's proposing not enough, William?
Because it's simply not. I don't see how you can advocate for more guns in the hands of Americans.
I am for anyone who is a law-abiding American, who wants to defend themselves, who is not otherwise disqualified because they have mental illness or have committed a felony or other violent crime or a misdemeanor of domestic violence, being able to defend themselves.
But isn't the argument therefore that because there are so many guns out there, we cannot guarantee that only those able-bodied, responsible, law-abiding citizens will have access to guns? Isn't that part of the problem?
You're going to have to rephrase that.
Look at the shooting in Texas with the kid. He got the gun from his father.
Yes.
All right? The Sandy Hook shooter got the guns from his mother. So it's not enough to say you think that every law-abiding, responsible adult should own a gun if they want to. What I hear William saying is that there are a lot of guns. There are just too many guns out there, period, and that these unstable, dangerous people have access to guns. So we've got to limit the amount of guns we put out there. Is that a translation?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm afraid that when you do that sort of thing, that yes, the number of mass shootings may go down, the number of crimes, but the number of people victimized may go up as well. He pointed up to Europe and the gun deaths in Europe.
Right.
One thing that always stood out to me is the UK. The UK has banned guns. They're now going after knives and wrenches and needle nose pliers. But in the UK, you've got a much higher rate of home invasion burglaries than you do in the U.S. Why? Well, you go and ask criminals who are incarcerated, and they say, well, we want to make sure the person's not home because if they're home, we may get shot. In Great Britain, they don't have that worry. They know there's not going to be a gun in the home. They know they're not in any danger. And if it's a 25-year-old kid against a 78-year-old man.
So why don't you have the per capita gun death rate in Great Britain that you have in the United States?
But you've got a much higher crime rate of people getting beaten to death.
It doesn't offset the number of people that are not getting shot. That's not the argument. We're talking about gun death rates
per
capita.
I'm talking about people being able to keep themselves safe is what I'm talking about.
I'm going to tell you why self-defense is a myth. Your study is from 1995. Kleck, 2.2 to 2.5 million self-defense uses. That suggests that the number of respondents who reported shooting their assailant was over 200,000. That's over twice the number of those killed or treated in emergency departments.
Again, he counted ones where you just brandish it. If you brandish it, he counts that as self-defense. No one gets shot if you brandish it.
All right.
And 70-some-odd percent of the time, just brandishing it got the would-be criminal to flee.
Matt Hoy, William Yanes on this broadcast. Another segment, then we'll start taking your phone calls. First, with great pleasure, I remind you that today's edition of Hometown Radio, sponsored in part by your hometown grocery store, Spencer's Fresh Markets, of course, in Morro Bay and Santa Maria, always online at spencersfreshmarkets.com. Open at 10 o'clock each and every night. Be sure to swing on by Spencer's and stock up for Memorial Day weekend. Here are some reasons why. Beef tri-tip or baby back pork ribs or meaty beef back ribs. Any item on sale, $2.99 a pound. Whole seedless watermelon, $2.99 each. California cherries, $1.99 a pound. Artichokes are large and tender, 99 cents each. A 5-pound bag of russet potatoes all week long at Spencer's, 99 cents. How about easy peel jumbo shrimp, $7.99 a pound? Fresh Atlantic salmon fillets, $7.99 a pound. All this and more, so much more, only at Spencer's. They're arguing during the break. In Morro Bay and Santa Maria, Spencer's Fresh Markets, always worth the drive. Shop at Spencer's, your hometown grocery store. We're proud to have them as a sponsor, The Dave Congleton Show. Top of the hour, we have ABC News, and then we will start welcoming your phone calls for William Yanes and Matt Hoy. They will be here all the way till 7 o'clock. We're having a friendly, albeit passionate, discussion about guns. I'm very pleased with this conversation. Before we go to the phones, I think we should talk about the role of the National Rifle Association in all this. And William, as I recall, you had some kind of connection to them. Weren't you doing work for them?
I joined the NRA when I was 9 years old as a Boy Scout. You know, they used to offer a marksmanship and firearm safety program. And
they, still offer the firearm
safety program. And Matt, you're a member of the NRA, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, William,
don't always agree with everything they do. But
fair enough. And so, William, what's your take on the NRA these days and their role in this gun debate?
Well, when I joined the NRA as a 10-year-old Boy Scout, they were about marksmanship, conservation, and firearm safety. Those were their three missions. They were taken over, if you guys want to Google the revolt in Cincinnati in 1977, by a bunch of hardcore gun rights advocates that felt that the NRA had kind of slipped into stodginess. They were actually talking about just becoming an outdoorsman magazine that de-emphasized firearms, but they were taken over by gun radicals, essentially, and transformed into a very powerful lobbying organization. They spend a lot of money. They spent tens of millions of dollars directly on the Trump campaign. They buy legislators who then vote against any anti-gun or gun control legislation. They put these ridiculous laws on the books that make it easy for people on a no-fly list to get guns.
Yeah. Matt?
Well, the no-fly list... The problem with that was the Republicans offered Democrats to put that into effect, where if you were on the no fly list, then that put you in the NICS system and you couldn't own a gun. The problem is the Republicans also in that same bill offered you a way, if you were on the no fly list, to go into court and get yourself off the no fly list. They offered you due process, and the Democrats would rather have the talking point. The issue with that is Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list for a period of time. The no-fly list is full of people with similar names, that sort of stuff. And, you know...
But what about the NRA?
The NRA? I don't think they... You know, Elizabeth Warren has famously said that she will not take any money from the NRA. I don't think they were offering her any money. The idea that the NRA gives money to legislators and then they betray their constituents for that money is insane. It's insane.
You're kidding, right?
No.
You're kidding.
So Planned Parenthood gives money to Democrats.
We're talking about guns.
And they really...
We're talking about guns.
The logic works the same.
Okay.
They give money to people that support their position to help get them elected. It's not I challenge you to find someone who's flipped because the NRA gave them the maximum $2,700 donation for a general election.
They own the legislative process around firearms laws in this country.
They
it's
own
really
the legislative
obvious.
Process because they can turn out voters who will vote those people into office and vote people out of office who don't follow what they want.
And that is one of the things that makes them special. That's what makes
them... It's the same with Planned Parenthood. It's the exact same with Planned Parenthood. It's the exact same with any other campaign contribution.
Go to his Planned Parenthood comparison. Is that a fair comparison?
I don't know if it's a fair comparison. Listen,
well, here
money
in California,
rules politics. Money rules politics. Whatever they are, okay? Money owns the legislative process. Big money does. The NRA, they use their 5 million members, not just to generate dues. Okay, so they've got millions of dollars in dues, but they can put those 5 million members to work in every state in key races where they've got a pro-gun candidate that they want to jam down the people's throat. And that's what they do. So they've used this volunteer army to raise money and to back certain candidates, or they will run attack ads on candidates they don't like. They're very smart about how they use their money.
But it's all legal.
It's all legal.
They're
yes,
not breaking the law.
It's the same thing Planned Parenthood does on the other side.
My point is, but see, most Americans want legal abortion the same way most Americans want more restrictive gun laws.
Are you really going to take us into abortion?
Most Americans want abortions banned after 20 weeks, yet Planned Parenthood gives money to legislators who want it from conception all the way through.
That no federal money is used in abortion procedures?
Let's not go there. Guys, not happening.
I hate to explain politics. Yeah. The National Rifle Association does politics like every other special interest group. They have members who are passionate about the issue.
Except
they get those.
Their product is deadly. It is inherently deadly. Guns are killing machines.
And should that be the criteria then? If your product is deadly, you're subject to different restrictions.
Why are they held harmless? I mean, look at what we do with an automobile. You've got to have registered. You've got to learn
exactly what I want.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
Why? What's the problem with that?
Let Matt explain.
If I buy an automobile, I don't have to wait 10 days. I don't have to go through a background check. There's not a limit on how many automobiles I can buy in any 30-day period.
It's not designed to kill people.
Let him make his case.
Worst mass shooting in America was Las Vegas. 60 killed?
58
killed.
Right.
Nice, France. 90-plus killed when some terrorist drove a box truck down a pedestrian thoroughfare.
So let's outlaw cars. Right?
That's your solution?
No, it's not. Guns. But what would society be like without guns versus one without cars?
Who needs a big truck to run people down? And that's the other thing is, you know, it's like, oh, well, gun manufacturers need to be responsible for these guns. When people run somebody down in a truck, we don't say, dang it, you know, we need to sue Toyota. Because Toyota made a truck that was good enough and built well enough to run people down.
Well,
guns are made for the purposes of, they are killing machines. They need to be controlled and restricted. Cars are conveyances that get people from one place to another. They serve a practical need in society. I mean, there's lots of benefits. They aren't inherently dangerous. As a matter of fact, we passed a lot of laws to make them safer. When we saw all these car deaths back in the 50s from lack of seat belts and poor engineering, we passed laws to make those cars safer. Cost more money to the manufacturers. Deaths from in automobiles
went down.
Cost
more money to the consumers.
That's right. Safety costs money.
Again, it doesn't cost more for the manufacturers, it costs more for the consumers. But that's the capitalism thing.
All right. As we wind things up this first hour, Matt, is there an argument that is being used by William's side, not specifically William himself, but just the anti-gun advocates that just think is totally wrong?
Well, I think the complaint or the issue, you know, William, I think we discussed this briefly during a break. William wants to get rid of all semi-automatic firearms, correct?
No, I didn't say that. I said what I would do is I would move all semi-automatic weapons under the same laws and codes that now govern fully automatic weapons.
Okay.
Semi-auto's got to go.
So semi-auto, again, is one trigger pull, one bullet comes out. William has just offered to basically ban 80% of the handguns sold today.
We're talking about rifles. We're talking about
80% of the handguns.
I would
semi-automatic.
Yeah, they're semi-automatic. Yeah.
Semi-automatic. 75-80% of the rifles sold today.
Sure.
And neither one of those would have stopped the shooting in Texas because he used a shotgun and a revolver.
But would it stop some shootings? I mean, we're not going to solve the problem 100%.
No, we're not.
But could we save more people?
I don't think so.
I don't think
high capacity magazine restrictions save a whole lot of lives.
Well, they actually do. The assault weapons ban in the United States resulted in a significant drop.
It did not. That's false.
It did too.
It's false. They went.
Whose numbers are you looking at?
Well, I'm not looking at the guy who redefined mass shooting of 7 or 8 people or more.
Okay. Good time to stop. Matthew Hoy, William Yanes on this broadcast. Off we go. News, traffic, weather. What do you think? We'll invite your phone calls. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio.